Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. It's Friday, the last podcast before the host of this very podcast goes on vacation for a week. Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm going to love it. I'm going to love not doing a podcast or not working. That's going to be great. I'm sure it's going to go great. But this is the Atlanta Sports Guys, and we are all here. Finally, back to normal. Max Markovich is here. He wanted to make a little bit of time out of his busy golfing schedule to partake in the podcast a little bit. Max, good afternoon. Or actually, good morning, rather. How are you?
Good morning to you. And the people just got to hear about Nate McMillan's wrongs.
You're going to hurt Garrett's feelings, I think. And that guy laughing over there is Garrett Chapman, who is also here. Garrett, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. How you doing, man?
Not too bad, not too bad. Got my black coffee. I'm good. How do you guys take your coffee?
Oh, black. Actually, coffee sounds nice. I should have made myself a cup before I jumped on.
I just had a sip of my Dunkin' black coffee as well, so we're firing away.
Dunkin' black. You don't put anything in your Dunkin' black coffee.
Nope. Iced coffee. I do a little bit of cream, a little bit of sugar, but not hot.
Yeah, hot coffee needs to be black.
I agree. This is amazing. I did not know that we would all be on the black coffee brigade. The lady has this like authentic honey that we got in Asheville. Now that is a game changer. Getting a little bit of honey in there, that is not too bad. Not too bad.
What makes honey authentic?
Question. Like the you know, it's just like the fake stuff. It's not really.
Do you mean organic?
Probably, I guess.
Authentic, because I mean, honey is honey, right?
No, honey is not.
It comes from bees.
No, this one's like straight from the bees. Like I think maybe the way they got it was they made sure straight from the hive. Like they got it right out of there, straight into the carton. They just really, really made sure that there was no other chemicals involved in the process. I don't know.
There's a standing agreement with the bees.
Yeah, they understood where the honey was going, how it was going to be processed, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's a very ship shape. Situation over there in Nashville. They know what they're doing. They have a good connection with the bees. That's what people forget about Asheville. So it's a great bee friendly area. Guys, we have to start with the Hawks, right? We have to start with the Hawks. We have to start with the series being tied 1-1, a fan getting banned for life for spitting on Trey. Not a great look for fans this week. the other fan dumping popcorn on Westbrook. What do we make about Game 2, Garrett? If you had to summarize the difference between how Game 2 went for the Hawks versus Game 1, how would you do it?
Clutch shots. Way down the in the end of the game. I mean, Trae Young comes back into the game. Should have been in sooner, which I think we're going to jump in on. He should have been in at the 10-minute mark, but he didn't come in there. But then he comes at the 8-minute mark. Hawks are down, I think, 10, I think, is something like that at that point. Hawks go on a 9-0 run. And after that, the Knicks make a couple clutch baskets, and then they double up Trae. Trae then distributes the basketball like a true point guard does, and Gallinari and Bogey and DeAndre Hunter, none of these guys can hit a damn shot. They could hit water if they fell out of a boat. It was the worst shooting performance that I've seen from the Hawks probably since March, or beginning of March, or February, since Lloyd Pierce was here. It was just such a miserably frustrating fourth quarter. And honestly, that's really the biggest thing for me. I mean, look, you got to hit shots. I mean, I think everybody not named Trae Young. Trae Young went five. He was 4 of 8 or something, 4 of 7 from 3-point range, and 50% of your shots were coming from three. But everyone not named Trae Young went like something like 11 of 37 or something along that, 9 of 37. It was miserably bad.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communication's only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't great. Max, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth stepping back probably and saying if you'd asked us if we'd take a 1-1 split in the first two games at MSG coming home, I think we would have. And I also think, especially when we could have lost both of these games, we could have won both of these games, we also could have lost one of these games. So 1-1 feels fair. I'm pretty frustrated with Nate McMillan's rotations, and we can get into that if you want. But I actually think the games were pretty similar overall. Things kind of fell apart. I was looking at the game logs. Things kind of fell apart basically at the same time in the third quarter in both games. And one game, Lou Will saved the Hawks, and one game, Lou Will buried the Hawks. and I don't really want to live and die by Lou Will. So, I think you have to think that John Collins will show up for game three, like arrive at the arena and put on a uniform. But, you know, you can't count on that anymore. And I think you have to expect that Bogey and Gallo in particular will shoot the ball better. So I'm
don't leave out Clint Capella. He doesn't get any excuses either.
We got to talk
on the defensive side. Yeah,
we got to talk about Clint Capella because he's getting absolutely beat up by Taj Gibson. He's getting beat up.
Oh yeah,
and like yeah, I didn't see that coming at all.
Yeah, I thought Clint Capella was going to be more of a force. I mean, on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, yeah, he's been fantastic. I mean, he had 5 blocks on Wednesday. I mean, the guy's a stud on the defensive side of the ball. But look, 4 points just ain't going to cut it. I think he had 5 field goal attempts or something like that. Like that's just inexcusable. He's got to get the ball and he's got to put the ball in the basket. We need him. That double-double machine, he was critical for the Hawks in the regular season.
I mean, that was the concern we had in game one, though. Like, I was texting you guys about it, where I was like, I don't understand the point of playing big when our bigs are not playing big. I don't understand the point of any of this. Like, I understand that this is how we've played all year, and you want to live and die by that, but, like, I was to the point where I don't know why we weren't... I mean, Gallo was not hitting anything, but at least he was trying on Julius and was making it a little bit difficult. So I would have done probably DeAndre and Julius at the 3 and 4, maybe Collins at the 5, but it was to the point where it's like there's no point in us going big, because going big is just it's just not working.
Well, it doesn't help when go ahead.
I think you have to ride Capella. If he took 0 shots, and by the way, he took 12 shots in 71 minutes. Lou Will took 15 shots in 25 minutes first 2 games. you have to play Capella if he literally was an offensive zero, because the defense sort of falls off a cliff without him, almost no matter what. And I agree. I've been stunned kind of how well Gallo's been able to hold up on Randle, because the size has really bothered him. But I don't think you can ride with Gallo or Collins at the 5 for any real prolonged period of time, especially because Collins just looks kind of weak down there. I don't know. He's really frustrated me, and I expected more from him. But I don't know. I think you can't. My big picture takeaway is the Hawks need to go away from going 10 deep to this extent. I mean, they're really like, they played a Kongwu for a bit. I don't think you can really do that. They played Tony Snell a little longer than I think they should. They got to ride their horses, because their horses are better than the Knicks' horses. Like our 5 against their 5, I feel pretty good about. It's just the rest of it.
Well, you have 3 silly fouls from John Collins to start the game. I think he had 3 fouls in 3 minutes of gameplay. That's what? you're fighting for a damn contract, and you put up 0 points. You go 0-for in game 2 of the first round. That's ridiculous. That's just inexcusable. 0-of-2 from 3, and he didn't take another shot. It's so frustrating to watch John Collins play. I mean, 15 minutes? Damn. And if you're Nate McMillan, he's got 5 fouls. Play him at the end of the damn game and see what he can do. I mean, my God, what is he going to do? Foul out? He's not playing anyway. So,
Yeah, exactly. If he fouls out, it's the exact same thing. He's not there. So, you know.
Put him in the damn game. Like, I mean, it's just ridiculous. God, this whole game was just so frustrating. It was so frustrating to watch. I mean, Trae Young can't do this by himself. And Bogey, if he doesn't go 2 of 13 from 3, the Hawks win this game. It's just, and I think things are going to change tonight. I think that the Hawks will benefit from coming home. I think everybody not named Trae Young was a bit rattled by Madison Square Garden. Trae Young just feeds on that crap, and he loved it. And he's a stud. I think he's proved that he is the leader of this team, and this is his squad. He's really stepped up, and I think when they come home tonight, I honestly, what do we have? 11 in a row here at home. I'm confident that the Hawks will get back on track tonight.
I would love to be a fly on the wall in the John Collins contract negotiations this offseason, and just have him. Like, he comes to the table and says, you know, I think I deserve a max. And they come back at him and say, you didn't score in game 2 of a playoff game. what are we talking about here?
I think somebody's going to offer them that max contract. Somebody will. And then the Hawks are not going to match it.
It's been tough. It's been as a premier John Collins stan over here. I'm the one on this podcast who's advocated paying him. It's been a tough couple of games.
Yeah. And I think he especially will turn it around tonight. Being at home, back in the confines of State Farm Arena, I think he'll do a little bit better tonight. You have to hope. Yeah, I mean, you really have to hope. Because if he doesn't turn it around in games 2, 3, and 4, then I worry for the Hawks.
I don't know, man. I just wonder what the big time adjustments are going to be. Because I think Julius Randle figured some stuff out last night or 2 nights ago. I think he was never going to play as poorly as he did in game 1. I'm wondering about the minute stuff, because did Rose play 37 minutes the other night?
It's unsustainable. 39.
But I'm saying is, like, he's doing that, and like, he's obviously at the tail end and he's injury riddled and all that kind of stuff. But like, Nate just saying out matter of factly that these guys cannot play 35 plus minutes a night is silly. The only person ridiculous. I would agree with that is DeAndre. He's coming back from injury. Maybe you want to be extra careful with DeAndre. That I would understand. I would understand the hesitancy with overexerting DeAndre Hunter. However, there is no reason to not overexert Trae Young, Bogey, Capella, and Collins. I don't understand that line of thinking. There needs to be more pushback there. Of just like, well, no, this is literally why a team got knocked out in the playoffs last year. A former Hawks coach got knocked out in the playoffs last year in Mike Budenholzer. They're not doing that this year. If you look at how the Bucks are playing, like they are not playing that 10-man rotation, not limiting Giannis's minutes. Like they are just like, we're going to go pedal to the metal and we're just going to blow out the Heat. Nate has done a bad job, I think, thus far. Like he has not been a good playoff coach thus far. This was a concern I had. I think he still has time to turn around, but if I had to say who made more adjustments and who was better prepared for game two, it's Tom Thibodeau, and it's not even particularly close. And that concerns me.
That's the thing. Like I can't agree with that necessarily. I mean, I can't lay it mostly on the feet of Nate McMillan because look, the Atlanta Hawks are getting open looks. He's not the one out there shooting the basketball and bricking it every opportunity he gets. I mean, 8 of 37 is inexcusable. Absolutely inexcusable. I mean, you're not going to take 50% of your shots if it's not part of the game plan. That's how the Nate McMillan and the Atlanta Hawks are going to beat the Knicks. And look, and if you're not going to hit your shots, then and my God, I mean, this is the fourth quarter.
Well, it's not about
alone.
That, though. If the shots aren't falling, you still live and die by those starters in the playoffs. Like, that's the thing. It's like,
he has to
push the buttons that he can control. And that is something he can't control. He can't control those open looks to go in, but he can control who is in to take them.
Yes. And just to add on to that, you know, Trey Bogey and Capella are playing 35 minutes a game through the first two games, which is about on par with what they were playing at the end of the regular season. For context, basically every other superstar in the playoffs is playing more than that. Giannis is playing 38 minutes. Dame's playing 41 minutes. Kawhi's playing 40 minutes. PG's playing 40 minutes. Luka's playing 40 minutes. Booker's playing 43 minutes. Ayton's playing 39 minutes. Davis is playing 39 minutes. Like we're the only ones. Trey is the only superstar in the playoffs besides, I think, Jokic, who's playing less than like 37 minutes a game. And so I think it's just kind of an abject failure if he doesn't play at least 38 to 40 minutes of the game tonight. And again, going forward, like he's the best player in the series, and it's not even remotely close right now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we have the best player and we have home court, we kind of have to press that, and we can't act like this is like the last week of the regular season, just trying to get through it like Nate's been.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's also no concern. Like, the difference between the Bucks last year and the Hawks right now is that the Bucks were like, oh, we had this amazing regular season. We want to save ourselves to get through this gauntlet in the bubble. Like, you could understand a little bit of the thinking there. The Hawks aren't playing for a championship. They're playing for playoff experience. They're playing for building for the future and setting the precedent of, like, this is playoff basketball. I have to do this, this, and this, and getting Trey and Collins and Bogey and getting their feet wet. You had the Sixers waiting for you. The Sixers are probably going to sweep the Wizards. They're going to be fine. Joel Embiid's just right there. Ben Simmons on Trey is just sitting right there. Like, you're going to get curb stomped. Doesn't matter. Just beat the Knicks. Like, you're waiting for death anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, just drive off the cliff going 40-plus minutes for your starters and see what happens. But if you go down to the Knicks, in this kind of Knicks team that's just not as talented as you, because you were hesitant to overexert your starters that got you here in the first place, That's inexcusable, and you should not be brought back as head coach of the Atlanta Hawks.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
See, on the flip side, like I'm looking at, I just want to talk about Derrick Rose. I don't want to change the subject necessarily. So, Max, go ahead if you have something on this.
No, I was going to change the subject because I want to talk about Trey for a minute.
Okay,
I just want to acknowledge Trey.
Yeah, of course. All right, so I'm on the flip side. So Derrick Rose, the guy playing Trey Young, so that'll be your feeder. That's your bridge, but. The guy put up 39 minutes. He went 9 of 21, 26 points. That's just, it's absolutely unsustainable. He went 2 of 3 from 3.
But are we sure it's unsustainable for four or five games?
Yes. He's not going to do it. He's not going to do it. I mean, did you see him in the fourth quarter? He looked like he was stretching and moving around, and he was gimpy at times. Look, this guy, I love Derrick Rose. I love Derrick Rose. He's a great player. He's a great story. He was an absolute baller before that injury. But he got hurt badly numerous times, and I just don't buy that he's going to be able to put up almost 40 minutes a game in a playoff series. I just don't see how that happens. I just can't buy it.
My thing with the Knicks is more that, like, they've kind of just defied their level of talent all year. And so I'm kind of done being like, Alec Burks, like, he sucks. Like, what's he doing scoring 27? Like, it just happens. Like, it's just happening. Like, the Knicks are not talented, and yet they're really good. And we just kind of have to accept that. But we can still beat them because, and this is kind of what I want to talk about, was just like, man, we've talked for like however many, what is it? Was Trey's third year?
Yeah.
We've talked for 3 years now, like this narrative, like the back and forth, like, oh, like, is Trey a winning player? Like, we've had this discussion, and like, I'm not calling out Chase because he's not the only one, but like, it's just been this like annoying drag when he's been surrounded by terrible teammates of like, oh, he's not a winning player. He's selfish. He's just trying to get his yada, yada, yada. Like, I love that he came out in these first two games and just stomped that. Like it's so clear to me that like, he's just kind of built for this. Like, he loved the MSG stuff. He came out absolutely firing in both games. And honestly was like really in control too. It wasn't like, oh, he was just hitting everything. Like, he was getting the offense going. He was throwing one-handed, left-handed passes to the corner for open threes. Like, he was making the right decisions. He's getting in the lane a lot. He only took three threes in game one, and then came back and hit four threes in game two. I just think no matter what happens, like the rest of the series, it's a really, really encouraging sign that Trey came out and just kind of shut up all of the sort of doubt about him.
That one picture of him, like when he's inbounding the ball and it's like just over, like you're looking at the fans and all of them are in his face and he's just looking back, looking at him and just smirking. After he just dropped a 30 piece. Oh, God, that's badass. I love that.
I would love to hear Chase's thoughts without using the word Luka at all.
I wouldn't. Like, we were texting, like, the floater, the game winner, like, they ran the Spain pick and roll three straight times, and they just didn't, the Knicks didn't have an answer for it in game one. And Trey just calling out, like, the fourth quarter is a different side of Trey that we haven't seen before. And for him to just be like, yeah, this is over, I am ending this, was cool. And they're not, he's surviving on defense, but also because of the guards that they have. I mean, he's surviving, but it's not like he is just playing above his pay grade on defense. Mm-hmm. And quickly, and Rose for sure, played really well. I don't know. I think Trey has been solid. Like, that whip to Bogey at the end of game one was awesome. He, like Max said, he has been in control. He enjoys this kind of hatred. I will say, and I don't know what you guys' perspective on this is, so I've seen a lot of Hawks fans very annoyed about, and we were texting about this too, like the game one play-by-play guy was very much in on the Knicks winning and everything. What I will say is there is clearly a difference in fan intensity, and there is something different about Madison Square Garden being full and raucous and just everything that was involved there. Like, excuse the spitting, that stuff sucks, and it, some of the chants were kind of lame, but like, it is a different atmosphere where they were all in there living and dying by their team. Now, Atlanta tonight will not be like that. There might be more Knicks fans in Phillips Arena tonight. God, I'm not calling it safe farm. That's a strong possibility, Garrett, right? Like, that is a... We've all been to Hawks games when the Knicks have been there, right?
Yeah, but can we talk about this for a second? Because I think that the Hawks have this, like, weird thing where... And I'm sure you guys have been to Hawks playoff games in the past, where the fans kind of show up for playoff games.
Yeah.
And in a way that, like, you may not expect. And like, we haven't played the Knicks yet. I went to the Wizards series, I think.
What I was going
to
say. We haven't had the Lakers.
The Celtics 08 series. But it hasn't been like Lakers-Knicks. So I will be curious, and I am definitely nervous about that. But I also have this weird confidence that, like, this Hawks fan base is kind of energized right now. Like, this is fun. This is more fun than any of those, like, mediocre six seeds that we had back in the day. Wow. Or honestly, really it's kind of on par with – I think at least on par with the 60-win team in terms of just excitement.
I don't know about that.
I completely agree. No one thought
that team was going to win the title either. So
people thought they were
going to
the finals. Kevin Arnovitz had a whole thing on that 60-win Hawks team to make the NBA finals. I mean, they were a number one seed.
But the peak of that excitement was like midseason when things were just like rolling.
The whole player of the month was the entire starting lineup.
Well, because they went 19-0 in January. The only team ever in history to do that.
And I think the peak of this team's excitement is right now. And just like Trey kind of just like becoming who he is. And like all of that and what it means for the future and all these exciting guys. I don't know.
I couldn't agree more, actually. No,
he was fun. He was big. He could do a pick and pop. He was clutch. Love me some Para. Hope he's doing well.
I think Max actually hit it on the head, though. Like, honestly, this team is super exciting, and I think Atlanta is a bit energized. Like, I was walking around Midtown the other day, and I was like, I was driving through Midtown. I should say I wasn't walking. No one walks in Atlanta.
whoa! That's not true. The Highlands, my old stomping grounds. I walked everywhere.
If you were on the Beltline, maybe, but
no. What? No.
I have friends who live on the Beltline, and they still drive everywhere. But
they're part of the problem. I'm driving through Midtown,
and I see people wearing like donning Hawks jerseys. I see people getting hyped for this on Twitter and social media, and I see fans who are not really Hawks fans, who aren't really vocal, who are like getting excited about it. And I just feel that energy, and I hope Max is right. I kind of agree. I don't know. We've never played the Knicks before, so it's like when they come to Atlanta, they travel in force, and I don't know. I'm worried that we're gonna have more Knicks fans, like you said. But for some reason, I just have this gut feeling that Atlanta's gonna show up.
I hope I'm right too. I think it will be, but also that'd be kind of a cool side by side. But it's also just the difference, and it's not really Atlanta's fault that we have a lot of transplants. But like I don't know. It's just different. So when I saw certain Atlanta people and radio broadcasters and things like that going after it, like hyping up that stuff, I'm like, well, you have to at least acknowledge the difference. Like, we've been to Atlanta Hawks games when they matter, and we've seen Knicks games when they matter. Like, it's just different. Like, we don't have to pretend that it's not different. Like, that's part of it I get. Now, openly rooting is a national broadcast where you're trying to present it as a non-bias that you don't want the Knicks to move on. That is a different conversation altogether. But the experience and the atmosphere is night and day. And to pretend that it's not, and that basketball is not more fun in New York in the playoffs, is silly. Like, it's just being intellectually dishonest. And that has driven me nuts. Where it's like, we can go after Knicks fans and go after the Knicks and go after the NBA wanting to push through the Knicks to the second round to get Philly, New York. But like, the difference is, it's still amazing to see that MSG was rocking the way it was. It's just different.
Yeah. Trey, just as a sports fan.
Yeah.
As a sports fan, you have Trey balling out, getting crapped on by 30,000 Knicks fans.
Right. Hawks fans aren't doing that to Julius Randle tonight. That's not happening. They're not all chanting and doing pre-planned chants and everything. They're not camping out State Farm Arena tonight.
As corny as those were. Those chants were so corny.
They were corny, Trey, but what I'm saying is they were orchestrated. Like, there's
you
no
know
Hawks
what's even
fans
cornier?
Orchestrating this.
How is no one talking about the fact that they had to hand out a piece of paper to determine the chance?
So stupid. That was so stupid. I mean, also, balding, when you have a crowd, when you have a crowd yelling balding, it sounds like balling.
Sounds like balling, yeah.
So stupid. Who came up with that?
Yeah.
I'm with you, Chase. I agree. Like, the Knicks fans are absolutely insane. They won one playoff game and left the arena chanting, We want Brooklyn. Like,
yeah.
They're crazy. Like, they're nuts. But that also doesn't. Like, that's the case with every like the Knicks Madison Square Garden for a playoff game that matters is a singular experience in sports. And so to say like, oh, like Atlanta's going to be the same way is dumb. But yeah. I really just like have this feel. The Hawks fans have always surprised us in the playoffs in Phillips with kind of sneaky fun crowds. And I really feel like tonight's going to be one of them.
I hope so. Oh, jinx. The Falcons. There is a report that they might get a first-round pick out of Julio. Is that some Falcons people putting it out there that, hey, we have some offers for first if you want to go after Julio Jones. Do you buy that the Falcons have a first-round offer on the table, Max?
I don't know if I buy it because I feel like they would have kind of just hopped on that right away, right? A 32-year-old overpaid, not overpaid, but highly paid receiver doesn't really fetch a first-round pick normally. But I did watch the interview with Diana Russini, who's the one who reported that they got a first on the table, which, by the way, said a future first, which does not indicate what year. But she said that it didn't come from the Hawks. Like, that information didn't come from the Hawks on her end. It came from – or not the Hawks, God, the Falcons. It came from another team who said, you know, they have one on the table and so the price is too high for us, which is interesting because you would – you know, you read that report and you think, all right, the Falcons floated it because that's what they want and they're just going to wait until they get it. But – I don't know. I don't know. I could see it. I think the market is pretty robust for him. There seem to be a lot of teams who are interested. And if one of those, like, you know, late first teams, Baltimore, New England, Kansas City, whatever, want to throw a late first at us to get Julio Jones and possibly win the Super Bowl, I could see that making sense for both teams.
Garrett, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they're just trying to get a bidding war going. I mean, it's Julio Jones we're talking about here. We're talking about the best wide receiver of the last decade, a guy who still is capable of putting up monster numbers, who changes a team and a roster just by his sheer presence. I mean, look, if you're the Baltimore Ravens and you're not willing to trade a potential a future first round pick for Julio Jones, you're out of your damn mind. Like, that Julio Jones makes you a favorite for the Super Bowl automatically, period, end of story. But and look, and that turns into what, the 32nd pick, and at the worst it's like 31st or something like that. What? You're not going to trade that for Julio Jones? I mean, we had Steve Weish on, who's from NFL Network on earlier this week, and look, salary cap, who gives a hell? Who cares? they're going to be able to adjust. He's with the Rams. He's seen a lot of the things that the Rams have done. They just pick up and move pieces around, and they adjust. And look, the salary cap can be adjusted. Like, they will make it fit. They'll make it work. And it's Julio Jones we're talking about here. Like, he is a perennial a pro bowler and an all pro. Like, this guy is a stud. And the Atlanta Falcons are really going to miss him. I'm going to miss him. The city of Atlanta is going to miss him. And he's going to make some team very happy. And look, I'm sure teams will be lining up to send a first round pick to the Atlanta Falcons for Julio Jones.
Can I just say, I love Julio Jones. I will miss Julio Jones on the Falcons dearly. He's probably the best player in franchise history. I would not trade a first-round pick for Julio Jones right now.
Then you're not going to get him. Then you're not going to get him. That's the thing, because some team is going to trade a first-round
pick. That's fine. I wouldn't – if I'm Baltimore, if I'm New England, whatever, maybe you could talk me in if I'm Kansas City. I just wouldn't do it. I think he's closer to retirement, honestly, than people think.
Yeah. Is that future first round pick going to win you a Super Bowl this year? No, it's not. I don't see how that happens.
You could talk me into it, but I just don't think Julio Jones is what we are making him out to be anymore. Because it's like, I would love to get sort of his snap counts the last year or even 2 years, because it's like, okay, he played 9 games last year. How many of those 9 games was he on the sidelines on a big third down, you know, sitting out an entire series, getting his hamstring worked? Like, I love him. And when he's on the field, he's still really good. And maybe not 100% of what he used to be, but like, that's still one of the 5-10 best receivers in the league. But if you look at who gets what receivers in NFL history have fetched first round picks, it is like only elite receivers in their prime. And like, the most recent example we have is Stephon Diggs, right? He's one of the 3 to 5 best receivers in the league. He is in the peak of his prime. And if Julio Jones was being traded in the peak of his prime, he would have fetched more than a first-round pick. But he's 32 and has had injury issues for years and is not exactly a bargain. And I just don't think I would do it. Like, I don't think a receiver puts any team over the top of the Super Bowl. And I definitely don't think Baltimore with that scheme. But that's a different discussion.
No, there's just the first one that popped into my head.
Yeah, no, New England, you know, you could talk me there. I do like that fit.
But see, like,
could you see him in Green Bay?
You're like, I'm out of there, and you're like, let me go play with the corpse of Cam Newton. I don't understand that line of thinking at all.
You're like, playing with Mac. You're playing with Mac Jones.
I don't think so. I mean, I think
Mac Jones will take that job.
I don't think week one Mac Jones is under center.
No, it'll be mid-season. It'll be a mid-season change.
I don't know. But
you're trading for Julio. You're trading for Julio because he's gonna, you know,
well,
you want
the problem with that rack changing up 150 from Cam yards to Mac this season makes no sense because of the install difference. Like the kind of offense that the Pats will have to run with Mac Jones versus the offense they are going to run and what they ran last year with Cam is a completely different playbook. I don't see how they just flip that in 1 week and then I don't understand how that would work at all. I think if Mac's the starter, he has to start right away. And if Cam's a starter, he has to start the full season. I don't see how that makes any sense to flip two completely different quarterbacks and two completely different playbooks. I don't think you can do that. I don't think the installs work that way in football. I think it would just be too much to flip it like that. I just don't understand, like, the team, the Julio carrot is for the teams like the Packers. Like, you know your quarterback's pissed off. You know that they want some more help. Julio's just sitting there. Like, he's just right there. Like, you've used first-round picks on everything but a Julio Jones type. I don't know why you don't just go all in. Like, if you're the Seahawks, Wilson, unhappy, just trade for him. Who cares? Like, you gave up a bunch of assets for a safety last year and Jamal Adams. Who cares? Just do it. Like, if you're a team that has an all-time great first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback and they're not happy and there's a disgruntled Julio Jones out there, even if he doesn't play enough snaps to make it worthwhile, will it make your quarterback worthwhile? Will he be happy that you threw a dart at the dartboard? Then yeah, go do it. But like the Titans, like what? Go play with Ryan Tannehill. Go play with Cam Newton.
Don't even have Arthur Smith there.
Like, I just don't understand that line
of
thinking.
I love the Titans fit. I'm just
why? Are we betting on Ryan Tannehill still being good? Three years in a row?
Yes, okay. I'm betting on Ryan Tannehill still being good. He's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league the last few years.
All right, well, he doesn't have Arthur Smith.
Yeah, because Arthur Smith is his offensive coordinator. Yes.
You think they're just going to abandon that system? No, it's
well, I mean, eventually it's going to run. Like, eventually Derrick Henry is not going to be the bulldozing, just freak of nature.
Right,
like,
then you got A.J. Brown and Julio Jones on the outside.
Ooh. I mean, Julio Jones makes any team in the NFL better immediately. Could you imagine? I mean, if
wait,
you're the
does
Packers,
he? I don't know if he makes everyone.
Are you kidding? Yes.
I don't.
Who?
I think it's hard.
Who
to
Who does
make
he the, not make better?
The
Chiefs. Come on.
I think they're
come
still
on.
The favorite with or without.
You're telling me, but you're still no. But that's fine. That's not what you're saying. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, what I'm saying is like I don't know if they're better. Like I think
of course they're better.
I don't know.
It's ridiculous.
I think they're just more.
I just want to watch an offense with Tyreek Hill, Julio Jones, and Travis Kelce with Mahomes throwing the ball. Like I just want to see that.
I don't.
That sounds terrifying.
You know what I want to see? Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley and Kyle
Pitts.
That's
exactly what I want to see with Matt Ryan throwing the ball. Man.
Matt Ryan should step in here and be like, no, screw this. Like, you didn't hit, like, you took Kyle Pitts. We kept Julio. You didn't take a quarterback because you wanted to run it back and see what happened this year. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be on vacation next week and I'm going to get the update that
he's going to be traded next week. So yeah, congrats.
Well, according to Steve Wyche, I mean, the Falcons are perfectly comfortable waiting until training camp. I don't think that happens.
Then
but
it's uglier.
Yeah. Cause then you're going to get the news won't stop for the next couple of
and
months.
And it's just a distraction all summer.
Yeah. And I think the Falcons just need to go ahead and do it and just rip off the Band-Aid and, I kind
of
want to see
the best
Green
Falcon
Bay.
Of all time. Is he the best Falcon of all time?
Yeah,
he is the
Matt
most.
Ryan.
Matt Ryan is the most significant. He is the most important. Julio
is the most talented.
Yes, he and Deion Sanders. But I don't give. I mean, I give. I didn't watch him play. I don't give Deion Sanders probably enough credit. But look, the guy was here for what 4 or 5 years and then left for San Francisco. I can't compare him to Julio Jones. Julio Jones is by far and away the most the best Falcon and the most talented Falcon in Falcons history.
The list of all time great Falcons is kind of embarrassingly small.
Yes.
So, you know, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones might be one
of
two.
Game Day jersey. Warrick Dunn's got to be in the conversation.
I like Warrick Dunn, but he was better.
I love Warrick Dunn, but there's no comparing him.
No,
Michael Turner actually sneaky up there. Michael Turner almost was a bell cow back for a Super Bowl team. He was more important than Matt Ryan that year where they lost to the Packers. Michael Turner is like the forgotten.
2012?
Yeah. He doesn't get hurt.
He was significant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He doesn't get hurt. That's a different season. It's a different season. Michael Turner was amazing. He was so much fun.
Roddy White got held. So that's all that matters.
Yeah, he absolutely got held. God, oh, you just reminded me of that. God.
quickly, because Max has got to hit the road. and the Vols are playing Bama in the SEC tournament. The Braves, very quickly. Ozuna's out for a while. Drew Waters is, I didn't realize his strikeout rate is like over 30% at AAA. They have an outfield problem. They have an injury problem. The rotation, I think, is starting to figure a lot of stuff out. Morton's a lot better. Freed's getting low contact. And thankfully, I shouldn't say thankfully, that's bad taste. Coincidentally, Mets are also getting hurt. And the Mets are also trying not to win the NL East. Do we believe, guys, that anyone wants to win the NL East this season?
Well, Austin Riley certainly does. Ronald Acuña. those two guys are playing out of their damn mind. Do I have you two on board finally with Austin Riley?
I've been hovering around the board.
I'm hovering still. I want to see, like, give me the rest of the summer. Give me the rest of the summer.
All right. I'll give you the rest of the summer. At the end of the season, I have a buddy, I have a dear friend of mine. He was like a diehard Braves fan. He has been crapping all over Austin Riley for the better part of like 2 years. Mm. And God,
I'm friends, but sure.
It's just so refreshing to see Austin Riley and the way he's playing. But I mean, look, the NL East, this series this weekend, we're playing that nasty team. We talked about the Knicks a lot, but we're playing that nasty team up in New York. And look, this is a critical series because, I mean, can't the Braves take the lead in the NL East this weekend?
Yes. I think they're 2.5 back, yeah.
Look, if the Atlanta teams win two games this weekend, I think I would be over the damn moon. Let's put it that way.
It's amazing the Nationals are only 4 games back of first place.
I think the NL East is just trying to figure a lot of things out, and I think they will. There's going to be a month, be it August, July, August, September, where just one of these teams just sort of figures it out and goes on a run, like a major run. And I'm waiting for that to happen. Someone's going to do it, and I hope it's the Braves. I hope it's the Braves. My confidence has dwindled a little bit because this team just cannot stay healthy. And it's not even that. It's that the Braves have lost significant contributors, too. So I want this team to be healthy. If they're healthy, they could be the Braves. I think they're going to make some acquisitions sooner rather than later. I don't know. My confidence is dwindled a little bit.
Bryce Wilson. We got to move on from this experiment. We got to move on. Maybe not Bryce, but Kyle Wright's got to go. It's over. It's not going to happen. He's 25. It's going to happen.
He needs a reset.
Yeah, he needs to get Colby Allard. Like, it's time to move forward on that. Drew Smyly, 8 starts, 6.43 FIP. That's, I think, how many more starts can you throw out there with him?
He played out of his damn mind up in Boston the other day. And what was that, Wednesday, Thursday? Mm. Or no, Wednesday. It was Wednesday. And he had a great game.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I think he had a 2-hitter going into the 6th inning. And then all of a sudden, he just dumps 4 runs on the board.
You just can't rely on him. Like, you gotta address that. What sucks is I would have been really comfortable if we had Soroka, Anderson, Morton, Yanoa, and Tucker Davidson. Give me Tucker Davidson, and I'm good. Like, Tucker Davidson, I think, is solid. Like, he's a solid number 5. I think he's actually someone I would keep around. I liked what I saw from him. I don't know, but Pache and the issues there in center. Like, now you have Ozuna gone. They've got to do something. I think Alex Anthopoulos knows at this point that he's got to make a move there. He's got to have somebody to protect Freddie behind him. And I don't know who it's going to be. Is there a name that stands out to you guys? I wish Mancini was a good good fielder because he would make so much sense here in Atlanta for this season. But is there a name on the outfield that the Braves could give Kyle Wright and other pieces for right now?
Good question.
I'm thinking about it. I'm just trying to think of who the sellers would be.
Oh, we're gonna have some sellers.
Oh, no. But that's the thing. It's still May. It's essentially June at this point. And
I would say the Pirates. Go ahead and lock them in as sellers.
Who do you want from the Pirates though? That's the thing. Like there's so many teams that I just look around and I just.
The Twins might be sellers. I think that's the most appetizing. Get Kepler in there. I would go and call the
Twins. What if we trade it for like Josh Donaldson? Bring him back.
No, I don't think that.
No.
You can't break up the Austin Riley bandwagon.
No, I mean, Donaldson is a DH, though. If we had the universal DH this year, that would be pretty sick.
Because Austin Riley's playing damn near elite gold glove defense right now.
Do you know that Austin Riley has a 1.9 WAR, which is higher than Ronald Acuña?
Mm.
Yeah, he had a negative WAR at the first couple That's weeks of the season.
Unbelievable.
He went from a negative WAR, and then just in the month of May, he just exploded. And he has the 10th best OPS, I think, in Major League Baseball now, just from the month of May, basically.
Mm. There you go. Are you guys going to, or I guess Max won't be there, but Garrett, are you going to the game tonight?
I am not. I have a stacked weekend. I gotta do show prep for the weekend. I got two shows plus Atlanta United and the Atlanta Hawks. And a show on Monday too. God, I'm busy.
There you go. That's good though. That's good. For that guy down there in Atlanta, Georgia, temporarily, the number two of this podcast, the number two co-host, Max Markovich, for the number one for another week. Shout out to Garrett Chapman for working hard, putting the podcast first, as everyone should, theoretically. Thank you, guys. We will be back after a week off for vacation. It's going to be good. I'm going to come back tan, like as a naturally fair-skinned guy. I'm going to come back super dark. It's going to be great. I'm going to be tanned out. It's going to be awesome. Love it. What could go wrong?
We'll be back to recap the Hawks sweep of the Sixers.
Will it be that long? All right, bye.
Heyo.
Will that be that long? Now I got to look at
no,
it.
What's no, probably schedule? Not. It'd probably be a preview.
Where is there a schedule for the rest of the series? Let me look this up.
Because we play at 1 o'clock on Monday.
Yeah. No, Sunday.
Or Sunday.
Sunday at 1. Wednesday. Game 5. Man, this series is going to go for at least another week, probably. It's a long series.
Hawks and 6.
Hawks and 6.
That was my original bet.
We damn sure aren't winning Game 7, so better be 6.
Hell no, yeah, it better be 6.
I don't know. I kind of would love Game 7. I think that'd be amazing. I think Game 7...
God, could you imagine Madison's... All the, oh my God, Madison Square Garden.
I think that'd be
awesome.
We're
losing game 7 by 20 if that happens. I just want to put that out there.
Okay.
Max, no, Trae Young would drop 45 points.
Oh, man. Unbelievable.
Could you imagine? 45 points in 35 minutes? Seems unlikely.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.